We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
You're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Texas is back. Or are they? Chapter 22. College Game Day gets a new family member, and that's really big news, and also plenty of picks coming up on this Friday edition of the College Game Day podcast for September 9th, 2022. College Game Day in Austin, Texas. Reese Davis, along with Pete Thamel and the great Bill Connolly, the only one who is mildly respectable in the picks so far. Bill's batting 500. Pete, you and I are going to be sent on a rehab assignment back down to the minor leagues and
arm strain.
see if we can get the glutes going again or something, because we've been getting our tails kicked in week one. Anyway, Bill, we got a lot of things to talk about. I do want to talk some about the Pat McAfee decision, which is phenomenal for College Game Day. But in terms of on the field, week one. You're handing out the Heisman every week because we never can start too early doing that. So who won the Heisman this week for you?
The return. It's funny that this is a surprise, I think, but the returning starting quarterback of the defending national champions, I think, had the best week of last year, and it surprised people. Stetson Bennett was absurd. That whole offense was just so much fun to watch. They had Oregon leveraged in every wrong way possible for, you know, the first seven drives of the game or whatever. It was a lot of fun, and he was pretty much perfect. So, yeah, I decided, you know, this is something I did like 10 years ago. I played around with like a horse race kind of deal, and it was fun. It was the year where Geno Smith starts off like this and wins the Heisman for like five straight weeks. And then Johnny Manziel just very slowly reels him in. Thought it'd be fun to try it again. And right now, you know, Bryce Young's up there. Caleb Williams is up there. But Stetson Bennett won the Heisman in week one, I say.
You know what? Hey, Pete, that brings to mind one of our listeners reached out to me, heard us talking about Stetson earlier. I think I drew a comparison to perhaps Doug Flutie and, you know, the fact that Doug Flutie owns a Batmobile. Maybe multiple Batmobiles, but I mean the actual Batmobile. But Bill already knows that because Bill is a loyal listener of this podcast, even when he's not a guest. So I'm sure you already knew that, Bill. Don't admit it if you didn't. Flutie's got a Batmobile, and we were saying, okay, what kind of superhero would Stetson Bennett be? What kind of superhero car would he have? But one of our listeners had a better idea. And again, I promise we're going to get to a lot of stuff, but let's quickly play this Stetson Bennett game. Would he start? He said we should go through, list some teams. Would he start there? Okay.
All right.
So I'm going to, and I'll opine on this too, but I'll let Pete, you get the first swing, and then Bill, and then I'll go. Would Stetson Bennett be the starting quarterback at Clemson?
Yes.
Bill?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree. Stetson Bennett would be the starting quarterback at Clemson. Would Stetson Bennett be the starting quarterback at Texas A&M?
Yeah.
Agreed.
There's something to be said, just generally, to step back for a minute, for an offense that's energized. Like an offense that's like to be, and it's an unquantifiable thing. I know we're here with Bill, who tries to quantify everything and does better than anyone doing it, but they're like an offense that is playing in concert with the proper maestro, with everything running smoothly, with taking what the defense gives you, moving the chains, mitigating mistakes, which really has been the evolution of Stetson Bennett, right? Like, I mean, there were self-destructive moments early, which is where the skepticism came from. So I really think like Texas A&M, needs that as much as anything else. And those are the two of the more talented rosters who need someone to just, you know, keep the trains moving on time. To his credit, he has shown he is more than a caretaker at this point. Yeah. I will give that.
Yeah, no, that was the biggest thing. You know, back in 2020, even, you know, you talk about quantifiable. Well, Georgia's offense has been pretty quantifiably good for the whole time that he's been in the lineup. It was just, we always kind of added a yeah, but to the whole thing. And, you know, he's a former walk-on. He's, you know, he's limited. He's a game manager. He's never been a game manager. He's been just a old quarterback.
Yeah.
And those mistakes kind of dried up after a while. He's been really, really good.
He's been limited by the fact that his coaches didn't believe in him. Period. Yeah. Period. I mean, say what you want. He didn't get any first-team reps last year. Now, they liked him. They thought he was a good player. They didn't think he was a starter. The offensive coordinator certainly didn't think he was a starter. Believes now. And look at the difference. And there's a huge difference. This is all about the perception of him coming in. And that's why I counsel any high school athlete in any sport. It's great to get, and I've talked to a lot of them, it's great to get the offer. You better go someplace where they love you, because coaches say, well, you'll decide on the field. Who said that's a bunch of junk. Look at what's happened. Look what's happened in Texas. Look at what's happening at Michigan. Now, it is true. It is true to a degree. So I don't want to say that they're cheating and they don't pay attention to anything that's happening on the field. What I'm saying is there are massive preconceived notions to overcome. If you aren't the guy they think should be starting, you won't you will get a sliver of a chance, and only begrudgingly. And as I heard the story, Stetson wasn't even going to start against UAB last year until maybe Beck. I think it was Carson Beck. One of the other younger quarterbacks when JT Daniels was hurt, didn't perform very well in practice that week. And Kirby sort of said, I think I can trust Stetson here to get us through this game. And he went out and threw 72 touchdown passes or something. But, anyway, and he's made believers out of them. But rare is the situation where someone who isn't perceived to be the guy really gets the chance. That's rare. So when you're a high school recruit in any sport, better to go where you know you're loved, rather than going someplace where they like you enough to let you be on the team. I firmly, firmly believe that. Okay. One more. Let's see. I've got one for you. Probably an easy one. Would Stetson Bennett be which is a bizarre notion to think of, the team I'm about to say. Bill, would Stetson Bennett be the starting quarterback at the University of Notre Dame?
Oh, man. In terms of, is he the best quarterback? Yeah, absolutely. It would be interesting to see how that race plays out, where he's got the blue chip redshirt freshman and everything. But, I mean, he would have made the Notre Dame offense much more effective last week.
Yeah, I would think you'd have to go there. I will be curious to see. I think Ohio State's defense is pretty good. And I think the sum is now sort of equatable to the parts, as opposed to the past two seasons when they had really good parts and didn't have a great sum. And so I feel like we will judge Tyler Buchner these next handful of games and get a fair shake. And he's young. He's going to make some mistakes. I felt like he put them in danger two or three times, and the ball kind of just hit the turf last week. Mm-hmm. Like there could have been, and there were no turnovers in that game, if I recall correctly. And there could have been he looked a lot more susceptible to a self-destructive turnover than CJ Stroud did at any point.
And I think Stetson would be the starter at Notre Dame. In fact, probably easier just to list the places where I don't think he would be the starter. I don't think he'd start at Alabama. I don't think he'd start at Ohio State. I don't think he'd start at SC. There are other places where he would be in the race. I'm not saying he's clearly better than every other quarterback in the country beyond that. There are a few other places. Maybe Miami, they have a hard time beating out Tyler Van Dyke. I'll tell you another guy to keep your eye on for weekly Heisman. The cat at North Carolina is pretty good. Drake May, Luke May's little brother's a good player too.
He ain't little.
He's not. Okay, so here's the last Stetson Bennett question. We're going to move on from this. Will Stetson Bennett play in the second quarter against Samford Saturday?
Well, they move at such a slow tempo. That might only be two drives. So second half, absolutely not. He better not. But, maybe it bleeds over into the first few minutes of the second quarter.
I'll just make a suggestion that we ship him to Michigan to start week three to keep that going.
Oh, and that would be amazing. Yeah. Let's do a mid-season transfer portal and just add to the mix there. College game day, Saturday morning from Austin, Texas. And it's going to be the debut on a full-time basis of Pat McAfee joining us. And Pat is a unique media talent. And as Pete and I discussed in the last podcast, Bill, there are no gradations of unique. You either are or you aren't. And Pat most definitely is. He really fit in on the show. And he detailed this on his show yesterday, that this has been a long process where it was mostly about timing. I remember the first time he was on with us at South Dakota State. We were leaving after the show, and Kirk and I post-show were walking out to the cars to leave. And we looked at each other and said, we need that guy on the show all the time. Because he brings, he just has something that's a little different that cuts through to people. He connects with people. He's authentic. And he's going to be a great teammate for the show. He's really excited about joining the show. The show is something that he's grown up watching and cares about. And to add his immense skill set to our show is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really, really looking forward to Pat joining us on a full-time basis. It's going to be great, I think.
Yeah, I'm fired up, Reese. He obviously, I think the word you used is connection there, right? And his sort of self-created media career that I've watched from afar has obviously been based on that. And I realized after spending week one in Columbus and going to Ohio State practice with Jeff Sims and being around that I was really brought onto College Game Day to be Jeff Sims' photographer for all the people who come up and want pictures with her. So I really think the onus of photography is going to be really falling heavy on me, because those are two people that have come to the show, Jess and Pat, that really, like, people, they have a magnetism and an aura to them, and they people want to be around them. So yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting. And all those years of my wife yelling at me to, like, focus the thing right and get it in portrait mode, I'm really, like, dialed in for my task as we go from city to city here to give people the proper images for IG.
Don't sell your magnetism short, Pete. Bill, don't you think people are drawn into Thamel's orbit?
Well, yes, I think I assume there's a two-step process here. Oh, yeah, you're Pete Thamel. That's awesome. Hey, can you take a picture with me with Pat over here? There'd be a legitimate period of recognition before they ask for the hand over the camera.
So a lot of the wives of the Ohio State coaches were at practice on Thursday. They have family day. And my joke was they executed perfect swim moves. Larry Johnson, the D-line coach, would have been proud. Hey, Pete, good to see you. Oh! And they, like, swim like, Jess Sims, I take your Saturday 60 class. Hey, I felt like the worst left tackle in America, because it was just like, hey, nice to – okay.
Never sell yourself short, Pete, because right now the people watching our show on YouTube, they're very concerned about you. Could you hold up a newspaper to make sure that it's today? That's right. Or being held hostage there? What is going on with your look? What's happening there?
So I'm already in Austin. I came in early to do a one-on-one with Quinn Ewers on Wednesday, and I'm staying at the hotel, which is actually quite nice. I certainly would not be complaining. It's just, it abuts another building behind me. And this is one of my pet peeves. It is a deskless hotel. This hotel is pretty swanky. I don't think a lot of people are coming to this hotel to work. So I have, like, a table that looks like it should be where you set your mini bar up for your happy hour. Like, this is, like, where you put the Tito's, before you go, down to one of these trendy Austin taco shops or whatever. And, so I had a little, it does look a little bit Cave and Kabul behind me. I will admit that. And, I apologize for those watching on YouTube. It's also pretty early in the morning. So I'm not an organic morning person, but I'm working on it.
Hey, Bill, do you know Pete would have had a full desk in his hotel if Colt hadn't gotten hurt?
I would take an inferior hotel for a good desk. Like, if we're talking travel here, I like to sit at a desk. I get my notebook. I like to get all my stuff organized. Like, I'm like on a, I'm, yeah. Anyway,
that's I the sit desk. Up. I sit because I kind of lock in. Once I get there, and I get there on Thursdays, I'll lock in. I sit up on the bed. I sit up straight, and then spread everything out on the bed. Now, if I will admit, if we have a good desk, then I work at the desk. But absent a desk, I think even last week, I didn't like the desk situation in Columbus. Great hotel, but the desk situation you couldn't really watch the game at the same time because it was like sitting in the front row of a movie theater. You know, you had to crane your neck straight up. So, so I didn't do that. I want to hear about the Quinn Ewers, so a little preview conversation. But the first thing I want to know was the car that got towed, the Aston Martin. I understand he's driving an Aston Martin.
So it was not. I did some deep investigative reporting on this. It was only a Porsche.
Oh, is that all? He has an Aston Martin and a Porsche?
I don't think he has an Aston Martin.
Oh, he doesn't? I don't know that. He had an Aston Martin.
He has an NIL deal, I believe, with a local Porsche dealership. Oh, well. And it was a fairly innocent thing that a college freshman, or I guess he's now a sophomore, would do. Yeah. He like gave a parking pass to his parents, and it should have been the parking pass he used. And I guess it got towed from a garage, which is hard to do, by the way. Like, that's just the logistics of the logistics of that. So it didn't end up being that big of a deal. It was $200. It got towed to the softball field, which is, I guess, where they tow all the cars on Saturdays. And it ended up being pretty amusing more than anything else. One of my friends' jokes would be is he could have an NIL deal with the tow truck company by next week. So that has been the big. The big kind of buzzy story in Austin this week. So I sat down with Quinn Wednesday afternoon, and I had talked to him on the phone before, and I'd met him briefly. I happened to be at Ohio State right when he got there doing a camp tour last summer. But I don't really know him, and I don't think anybody really knows Quinn Ewers in a way, from our space. I think we know a lot about him, and he's very accidentally. He's certainly not one who wants to draw attention to himself. I will say that. He's a quieter guy. And in fact, when I was talking to people, you know, in his family, and I talked to Riley Dodge, his high school coach, who's one of the more dynamic high school coaches in the country over there at Southlake outside Dallas. And, you know, they were all like, oh, you're talking to Quinn? Good luck. Like, because he's kind of a little bit of a quieter guy. But, you know, a couple fun things about it. Well, I asked him, I said, you know, look, you became the face of NIL and the face of the transfer portal, neither of which you really wanted to do. And he was good. He was reflective about it. And basically he said what athletes have probably wanted to say for years. I had to do what was best for me. You know, like he went to Ohio State, it wasn't going to work. And so he came back home and he feels, and his family feels like this is all worked out in the end. Mm-hmm. Like he had committed to Tom Herman early on in his high school career. He wanted to go to Texas. He grew up watching Texas. He said, there's a family story where when Vince Young went into the end zone, he was 2 or 3 years old and he was like sitting in the living room, like playing with toys. So, but he idolized Colt McCoy. He got like, you know, he meeting Vince Young and Colt McCoy was a big deal to Quinn Ewers. He has the state flag of Texas tattooed on his thigh. So he was good. I enjoyed talking to him, and I think people will be interested in the interview, which is I think going to go Friday SportsCenter in the evening, and then it'll be in part on game day too. Just hearing him reflect a little bit on his journey and in this moment, I found him to be authentic and pretty interesting.
You think he's a star now, Bill? You let him lead the 20-point underdog Texas Longhorns to a victory over Alabama, who broke their hearts in the 2009 season, then disappointed the high rollers on the 40 acres when, depending on which version of the story you believe, they either tried to lure Nick Saban or almost lured Nick Saban, didn't get him. Let Quinn Ewers lead them to that upset victory. Let Sarkisian have that signature moment right then behind that quarterback, and he'll have all the Porsches he wants. He'll have everything he wants in that state forever if they could do that. So we're going to make picks soon, so I don't want you to make the pick yet, but we'll get it going in a second. Quinn Ewers, what are the chances of that without you making the pick, Bill, from a mathematical perspective?
Well, the biggest thing I learned when putting together my Friday column and kind of piecing together the game he had, like I hope that Texas was keeping a lot in reserve in terms of the playbook. And I think they probably were, 16 for 24, 200 something yards. It was a good performance. Nine of those passes, if you create a little box, like from the left hash to the sideline, 5 yards downfield and back, super easy passes, just good for a right-handed quarterback. He was 8 for 9 on those passes, which is fine. Those passes traveled a combined negative 11 yards. but gained 118 yards after catch. It was just quick, like extension of the run game kind of stuff. And that was where a lot of their yards came from. He was 0 for 3 on passes, 20 yards or further downfield. So I felt a little less good about the stats after I kind of dived in a little bit. But we also know that this was Louisiana Monroe. They were obviously keeping things in reserve. I'm curious what where they think they can find advantages against Alabama. You know, we heard during the broadcast, Utah State was like, we think we can test their cornerbacks on the outside. And then they went like 1 for 5 passing, on those longer passes down the sideline. Texas will have, better receivers than that, but it's still this Alabama defense might be the best one they've had in a few years. And we're going to find out Quinn Ewers' capabilities. Let's put it that way. We're going to find out exactly where his strengths are and where he still needs to grow against this defense.
And everybody, including me, talks about Will Anderson because I think he's the best football player in the country. But if you commit extra blockers to him, then you got to deal with 15 Dallas Turner. And if you try to double up on them, they even have a package where they bring in 41 Chris Braswell. And I mean, you're not going to be able to commit enough to stop all of them. But it is a good plan to get the ball out of Ewer's hand fast and get it to Bijan Robinson, which is what Bijan has told him to do. He's like, when in doubt, check it right here. And he's a great yards after the catch guy. Hey, let's do some picks. Taylor, despite the fact, and as a fair warning to the people listening, surely our luck for Pete and me will change soon. But Bill's a 500 batter right now. Sarah is the one who's crushing it. She's got the best record of the bunch. But Taylor, you want to call out some games for us and have us make picks here on Friday?
Certainly. Do we want to reveal these overall record? Why don't we just reveal
Okay. We need to own it. Yeah. Embrace the suck, as Fitz would say. And there's a lot of hugging.
You know, last year I did a pick show with Kevin Negandhi and Joey Galloway, and they were not about to reveal their overall record. So I appreciate the transparency, guys.
Look, here's the thing. Here's the thing about this, Taylor and Bill and Pete. It's a true false test, man. It's a true false test. Because you can be on the right side and something weird happens at the end. They either do or they don't cover. And, I'm not saying there's not skill to it. There is some skill to it. But look, I mean, it's a half point on Appalachian State if the guy doesn't decide to turn around the two-point conversion. I'm on the right side of that, And
right.
There are a lot of those like that throughout.
I think we learn that the men and women in the arid region who do their formulas to pick these are very good at their jobs. I'm reminded of that every year because I'm like, yeah. And I was like, what was the? Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a hook again. Like, or midway through the fourth, it's like right there. And then there's weird ones where you're like, man, I would have thought Louisville was a 13-point favorite. And then you're like, nope. And they get the doors blown off.
At the end of the day, I want to be great in my picks on the podcast because we're all competitive. But as long as I knock off some big super dogs every now and then on the show on Saturday morning, and I'd like to thank Jed Fish and the great Jaden DeLora and Jacob Cowing for bringing me home with the outright win on Saturday against San Diego State. So, at least there's that. I always look for the positive somewhere along the line. Before we move on, there's one quick thing I want to mention. Now, twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny as a podcast hosted by ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, reacting to the biggest games from the weekend. Every Tuesday, she'll highlight the winners and losers from the weekend with Dominique Foxworth. Then, later in the week, she'll be joined by different expert guests to preview the most intriguing games. That's the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
For those of you watching on YouTube, which is now the second reference I've made to that, Pete has now adjusted the lighting. He no longer looks as if there's a halo around his neck, and maybe he's avoiding going into the white light. Pete, you need to stay with us. I'm glad things are better.
I was just bragging about my photography skills, and I'm undercutting it as we speak. So
let's pick some games. Start. We've give us the records. We know we stink. Let's.
Okay, so overall, fellow producer Sarah Abbott is 9-5 on the season. Then we've got Bill Connolly, 7-7. Myself, 6-8. Pete, you are 5-9, and Reese, 4-10 on the year. Last week's results: Sarah, 6-3. Bill, 5-4, myself, 3-6, and Pete and Reese both a resounding 2-7. So we're picking lots of games, lots of ground to be made up. So I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to get a call from the 86 area code, and they're like, Pete, could you just sit the Friday podcast out and have Sarah take your place? Exactly. I'd be like, yes.
if my winning percentage is 2-7 again, I will consult with Sarah for every pick next week. Yes. I will make before I will allow her veto power over all of my picks, unless she's 2-7 too, or something like that.
Sarah, did you pick Nebraska?
So I did, but I actually texted Taylor at first when he was like, I just assumed Nebraska you would pick. And I actually was like, no, Northwestern. I know better. But then I changed my mind for moral reasons.
So you should be better, but you actually let your heart get in the way of your mind.
Yeah. Isn't that just like the age old tell, right?
Yes.
All right. Let's, I don't know why, let's be gluttons for punishment and try to do this again.
All right. One quick note here from Darius at ESPN Sports Information Group. I reached out this morning. We were talking about home underdogs, and he noted that home underdogs in week one had a straight up record of 6-11, but a record of 9-8 covering the spread. And that included both Hawaii games from week one and week zero. So just something to chew on there.
That's not what I expected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I expected it to be a little more definitive than that. But anyway, okay.
All right. Bama at Texas. Bama, 20-point favorite. Well, Lee, this is the only double-digit game, maybe the only one that we're picking, but certainly the largest spread. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill for this one.
I have some pause for a number of reasons. Alabama's the better team. Alabama should win the game. But Texas has been pointing to this. It's the opportunity to make a definitive statement of the Sarkisian era. It's an 11 o'clock kick. The heat's not going to be a big factor for Alabama. It's hot in Tuscaloosa. If you've ever been to Tuscaloosa in August, it's hot. So the heat will be the same for both. I mean, it always is, but I mean, the effect of the heat will be the same for both. The thing that does give me a little pause is Alabama's performance is a big favorite on the road last year. They got out to a big lead at Florida, but they had to hang on. They pulled the Auburn game out of the fire at the end. And those, both of those games, they were big favorites. There were a couple other games at home too, where they didn't perform as well, but on the road like that, I think Saban is unbeaten in this situation, has a strong record against the spread, as he has just about any record you'll go. Because of that defense that I think has the potential for this era to be, right on par with Georgia's defense last year, because the game's played differently, I don't really equate them to like some of Saban's early defenses there or some other great ones you might think of from other schools. I'm going to go ahead and begrudgingly lay it even with those fears about their performances as big favorites on the road last year in a couple of games, and knowing that this is going to be a frenzied atmosphere, as Nick often tells his team, I'll clean it up a little for the kids. When you go into these environments, one of the big things is to endure the crap storm. And there will be a crap storm early. There will be a play. There will be a tendency breaker, a play they haven't seen. What worries me about the spread is Texas popping a couple of those early and getting points on the board that you have to make up. But I'm going to lay the 20, but I'm not strong and firm in doing that. But that's what I'll do. I'll take Alabama and lay the 20.
I spent this week bemoaning my lack of being able to embrace home underdogs, right? Like I asked Taylor to look up the stat. So I'm going to go completely against myself. I was 2-7 last week. I think of this as Alabama's opener, and Saban as a big favorite in openers has been elite. And I just think the two places where Alabama has a distinct advantage are the offensive line and the defensive line. I think they will dominate the trenches, and that's where Sarkisian has to grow this program up to make it competitive in the Big 12, quite frankly, instead of in the, not even to mention the SEC. So I have that Arkansas game seared in my mind, and I have a lot of questions about Texas's defense still. So I do think, like, if this is a 2-touchdown game in the third quarter, there's a little incentive for Alabama in the state of Texas where it's recruited well, and it's going to need to continue to recruit well for Nick to maybe keep the pedal on a little bit. So I am going to protect myself against myself, because there's a better chance this thing's 42-10 in the fourth quarter than there is it's 21-20. So I'm going to, when in doubt, go with Saban. And if that is my North Star and I lose, so be it.
So now I have to decide, do I clinch Texas covering by also going with Alabama and making it unanimous? Or
Reese picked Texas, didn't he?
No, I took Alabama.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Yeah. So if Texas covers, there is a path to creating some good logic here. So who beats Alabama? It's not necessarily, the most polished offenses in this and that. It's Stephen Garcia. It's Chad Kelly. It's the guys. Alabama does a great job of basically daring college quarterbacks to make passes the college quarterbacks can't make. But the guys who are like, yeah, I'm trying it, those are the guys who beat Alabama and Saban. And Quinn Ewers has an arm that made him pretty much a perfect recruit in high school. So he has that capability, and we'll find out if he can, have the YOLO game going here and make some humongous throws. My numbers say Bama by 19, so they're not really helpful at all here, but I just cannot get past the idea of Texas's defense ranking 86th in defensive SP plus last year. Alabama's been top four for a number of years now. I can't get past the idea that last week Texas really struggled on passing downs, and now they have to face Will Anderson, Dallas Turner, etc. I'm excited about the possibility of Ewers making some big throws, and I just can't go against Alabama. I just can't. So it's unanimous, and now Quinn Ewers makes some big throws in Texas covers. I'm going Bama, and I'm clinching that we're all going to lose this one.
Yeah, congratulations to all of you who just decided to bet on Texas.
We need ESPN stats and info for our record when we all think one thing.
That's right.
Because I bet it's a pretty high percentage on the other way.
Anecdotally, on College Game Day, if you see one logo across the board at the bottom, it is an absolute jinx for that team. Yeah.
So somebody's taking a screenshot of that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's not even against the spread. That's always just straight up, and it's a jinx. What's next, Taylor?
We've got South Carolina traveling to Arkansas, who is an 8-point favorite. Interesting game here.
Last year, South Carolina had a solid defense, and its offense dragged them way down, and they couldn't beat anybody good or really stay close to anybody good last year for the most part. So this year, Spencer Rattler comes in, and it was basically the exact same story in week one. Defense was good. Offense was dreadfully inefficient. Rattler was under a lot of pressure. I think Arkansas has some secondary injuries, if I remember right. So like that, you could kind of talk yourself into, if he's able to buy time, then this one gets pretty high scoring and South Carolina keeps it close. But I think I at this point, I trust Arkansas way more than I trust South Carolina.
I agree. I want to believe that Sir Big Spur and the boys are going to roll in there and make it a great game. But the offense didn't get off to a great start last week, as you mentioned. And candidly, I thought Arkansas had an opportunity to make that margin of victory bigger against Cincinnati than it was. Missed some opportunities. Yep. So all credit to Cincinnati. I mean, those dudes played their guts out Saturday. But I'll take Arkansas. That number, they put that number there to mess with your head for a reason. If it were much smaller, this would be easy. If it were bigger, I'd take South Carolina. But I'm going to go Arkansas and lay it.
Well, it wouldn't be any fun if we all picked the same thing. I think one thing that Shane Beamer has brought to South Carolina has been competitive stamina. That's like a new phrase that we've heard. And again, they didn't go march down and blow, you know, go toe to toe Georgia or anything. But I think in the games against mid tier SEC competition, they showed well. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, they had two special teams touchdowns. Is that right? Off block kicks?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
On Saturday. So they have found a way with a roster that didn't find a way under Will Muschamp. They have found a way with what they have now. They have stayed pretty solid across the lines, which is, I think, a place where Arkansas under Sam Pittman has been pretty good. So I think you can expect some improvement from Spencer Rattler and, shake out some of those first game inefficiencies. And I think they go in and muck it up in Fayetteville. And if they don't win, they keep it, they keep it close enough.
You know, and the other thing, Pete, on that is there might be a little bit of a hangover effect for Arkansas because that was a tough game last Saturday against Cincinnati. Next up, Taylor.
Reese's demolition derby game of the week. I'm interested to hear which of those is your demolition derby game for this week. A couple weird lines here. Tennessee is a 6-point favorite going to Pitt. The disrespect for Pitt.
Well, I'm going to take the home underdog because if anything we learned, it's to take the home underdog. Pitt went there and won last year. Pitt returns a majority of the people not named Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison, meaning the people who are going to. Pitt is sound on both lines. They played Josh Heupel when he was at UCF in a series too, back to back, and played well. They are not going to be surprised by anything, you know, by Forvert U that's going to come out of Tennessee. So I feel like there's a little bit of spirit in the Pitt fan base coming off that. I feel like it'll be a better environment at the Ketchup Bottle than it normally is. And I think the Panthers are going to win outright. Dismissive Bill Connolly.
The outright kind of threw me. I'm impressed. I like that. I mean, look, if you're going to choose a home underdog, you know, to lose by less than seven, you might as well, you know, get the better line and pick them outright. I have to go with Tennessee just because my numbers have been insisting all offseason that Tennessee is legit. And last week they ended up underestimating Tennessee pretty dramatically. So I have no choice. I don't have to even think about this one. SP Plus is considered Tennessee a borderline top 10 team this year. And if they're a borderline top 10 team this year, Pitt gave up a few more big plays than I was expecting them to last week against West Virginia. And Tennessee will just destroy you with big plays if you give them the opportunity. So really curious about the other matchup. You know, when Pitt has the ball, we'll find out what we need to about Tennessee's defense. I think Tennessee just scores a ton of points and ends up covering.
I think it'll be a high-scoring game as well. I think Tennessee is going to win the game, but I'm not going to fall into the trap of taking way too many favorites. So I think Pitt's defense regarding the big plays schematically, Narduzzi historically, you know, can create some miscues, even though Hooker's been great at avoiding those. I'm going to take Pittsburgh in the points, but think that Tennessee wins the game straight up. So I think it'll be a pretty close game, much like last year, maybe even similar to last year. But I think if I recall that game correctly, I think Tennessee rallied after Hooker came off the bench for Joe Milton. So maybe it'll be one of those games where Tennessee keeps threatening to pull away, can't quite do it. I think Tennessee wins the game, but I'll take Pittsburgh to cover.
Bill, you're going to get an angry phone call from Pat Narduzzi. He dressed down Scott Van Pelt last week, so be careful for that.
I'm fine. That's cool. He's
You know, I mean, by the way, what was that about? But somebody, I don't even know who said it, but something, there was a, one of the ticket brokers gave a stat, and it was relayed, and then Pat got all mad about it. I mean, we said what it was, at least on our show. We said, you know, it's like probably between 60-40 and 65-35, you know? I don't know why. Who knows? These guys get mad about stuff. Okay, go ahead. Just roll my eyes at him. It's like, come on,
manufactured
man.
Manufactured adversity. They well, manufacture but, adversity.
But you so. Know what? Anything that Narduzzi might have gotten mad about that makes you go, come on, man, was offset and mitigated and forgiven because of his brilliance wearing the mic on the pregame show on game day. He was phenomenal, as good as it gets. So, you know, even if I was like, come on, man, you know, with the thing with Scott, after his performance pregame, I'm like, all right, that's a win. All right, go ahead. That's a little inside baseball stuff, I guess.
Houston is going anywhere and everywhere in Texas for a game. They're headed to Lubbock, and the Red Raiders, a 3-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill for this one.
Only two teams beat Houston last year, Cincinnati, Texas Tech. Houston squandered that game a year ago. Tyler Shuck out for Texas Tech, but Donovan Smith played really well in relief, albeit against Murray State. There used to be a stat about teams coming off multiple overtime games really struggling in the next outing. I'm going to – boy, this is a tough one. I'm going to ride the Houston bandwagon one more time, although the early performance against UTSA, who I know is a good team, I'd sort of had Houston pegged as the team I thought was going to be the best out of the group of five. I know Pete likes BYU, and I do too. I like them as well. I had cause for not believing that watching the first game, but I'm going to stick with Houston at least this week. And I'll, since the spread's so small, I'll take the Cougars.
I'm going to listen to myself. I think that's probably it's me, right? It's my turn.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. I don't want to jump you, Bill.
I
feel like Texas Tech and the team Matt Wells left behind is just talented. Like, I think they're good. I think they're good at receiver. And I feel like Donovan Smith, people in that program have felt like he's better than Tyler Shuck. So I don't feel like that is a like huge drop off. And I think some of the knee jerk instinct is going to be like, oh, their quarterback's hurt. They're going to, you know, and it's a little weird. They're favored over Houston because people perceive Houston better. So Lubbock is a funky place to play. I've just seen more weird lines there and more like mediocre Big 12 early good season vibes go die there in Lubbock. So I'm going to listen to myself and take the home. Well, they're home favorite. They're not a home underdog, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're home favorite. Yeah, I'm just going to take the home team. I think that there's enough good juju in that Tech program right now where they can figure out a way to beat the Coug.
Yeah, I agree. Donovan Smith is really good. Like, if he wasn't as good as Tyler Shuck, it was, you know, 1% worse, and they had a really good situation there. This is great podcast fodder here. I'm going to talk about a measure I follow each week. It's called post-game win expectancy.
I love that, by the way.
All the stuff that goes into my SP Plus ratings, all the predictive stuff, success rates and whatnot. Basically just, you know, the post-game win expectancy takes all those stats, tosses them into the air, and basically says, well, if you look at the stats from this game, you would have expected to win X percent of the time. There was one extremely unlikely loss or win last week, and it was Houston. Houston's post-game win expectancy against UTSA was 4%. Basically, you know, a 1 out of 25 chance there that Clayton Tune takes that many sacks, the offense stinks for that long, and you know, UTSA does all the damage they do, and then Houston still figures out a way to win. It was extremely unlikely, and I think Texas Tech is better than UTSA, so I'm going with Tech right here. I do think Donovan Smith is solid. I obviously no reason to trust the Texas Tech defense just yet, although I think it's more talented than it's been in a while. But I think Texas Tech with Zach Kittley and all that other stuff, I think they have too much to offer here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This next game, when it was brought up on the Stanford Stephen the Bear podcast, they both just started shrieking about how they wanted nothing to do with it. Iowa State going to Iowa, and Iowa is a 3.5-point favorite.
What's the over-under?
It's a great question. That I
nine.
Four, 40 or 41, I think.
Is it double figures?
Yeah.
Pick
sixes count.
Okay. I'll go first here. I don't know who you said, Taylor, but I'm going to jump on this one. Iowa, because there's no O, just I-wa. Iowa owns the Cyclones. And there is no reason after that awful offensive performance last week to pick Iowa to beat anybody. But until I see it, I will take the Hawkeyes over the Cyclones. Until I see the Cyclones do it, I will take the Hawkeyes against them every time because they can find a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory when they see those black and gold helmets across the way. When they see that herky Hawkeye on the headgear, they step back. And until I see it, I will assume that Riley Moss has a pick six and Jack Campbell takes a ball away from somebody and goes in and scores, and that Iowa State muffs three punts when they have an opportunity to win the game. It's in their head, and I need to see the breakthrough. If they break through this year or any other year, they will beat them by 1,000. It won't be one of these 1 or 2 point games. Whenever, and look, Matt Campbell's a great coach. They've done a great job with the program, and probably they'll break through someday. Maybe it's Saturday. If they do, it won't be close. They will smash them and take out like a half decade plus of frustration. But until I see it, horrible offense and all, I'll go with the Hawkeyes.
Yeah, just last year, Iowa gained like 160 yards and won by 10 against Iowa State.
I called that game. The self-destruction was remarkable.
No, this everything about this game is just bait. There's absolutely no reason to think Iowa scores even 10 points without a couple of return scores. There's absolutely no reason to think that, just looking at what Hunter Deckers did, everything we've heard about Hunter Deckers, it feels like this is a great opportunity for him to really kind of shine and prove that the hype that was coming out of Ames is real. Like, this is all just perfectly set up for everybody to assume Iowa State wins by 17 and gets the monkey off their back, and then Iowa says ha 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 and wins like 13-0 or something. So I'm gonna give Pete. I'm gonna make sure that Pete has an open floor here. I'm gonna step on the rake again. This is we're gonna go. I'm gonna take the same logic Reese did, but do the opposite and basically just guess. I'm gonna keep guessing Iowa State until it actually happens. I'm gonna go against every impulse I have and say that Iowa State covers.
What did your number say, Bill? Or did the numbers reject it because they just didn't want to be computed into what Iowa did last week?
somehow the numbers project that both teams are going to score in the 20s, which, if you ever want to doubt math, I think this is a pretty good opportunity for it. But it says basically Iowa by 2.7. So it's, again, really, really close to the line. It's not a lot of help. And the floor is yours, I guess. You can go. There's not going to be a unanimous pick here.
Yeah, pass the rake, because I would like to step on it as well. I just feel like Hunter Deckers, to say Hunter Deckers is better than Brock Purdy is ridiculous, right? Brock Purdy could be the best quarterback in Iowa State history, and Hunter Deckers has played, 10 minutes, right? I do think that there is a feeling around the Iowa State program that Hunter Deckers has it. He went out and again, it was against an inferior opponent to open the season, but he went out and it was 33-yard pass to Xavier Hutchinson, 33-yard touchdown pass to Xavier Hutchinson, 8-yard touchdown pass to Xavier Hutchinson. He went out and quite frankly, didn't flinch. Now, it's going to be a whole lot different than Jack Campbell bearing in on him on Saturday in a hostile environment. But I just go back to Iowa has two scholarship wide receivers available on Saturday. And that's something to watch if you are going to invest in this game. Some of their health situations at wide receiver. But I just think there's a little bit of an element of dynamism with Iowa State that Iowa just frankly doesn't have right now. So absent some more special teams magic, I am going to take the Cyclones to get off the hex.
Did you guys see that move Jairoel Brock made on the sidelines? One of his on runs that unbelievable. Yeah.
Yes.
Start and stop on the left side on. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. What we got, Taylor?
Next game, Kentucky going to Florida. The Gators, a 6-point favorite. Let's go, Pete Bill. Actually, let's go, Reese Pete Bill.
I've got to believe that game took a lot out of Florida. I'm not as high on Kentucky as some are. And Anthony Richardson is a dude who elevates everybody. Kentucky's going to have to keep them out of the red zone because if they get specifically inside the 10, going to have to keep them out of goal to go because if they get there, they're going to score. And Florida, I mean. I'm going to take Kentucky in the points because I think it's going to be a tight game. It's an opportunity for Levis to step up in a big game, big stage. I think Kentucky hasn't beaten them in consecutive years. And, you know, really got the notes here. First time since 76-77 is what they're trying to do. It's only the fourth time that it's been a ranked matchup since Bear Bryant left Lexington. So I'm going to – what I get? How many points am I getting with Kentucky? Six, is that right?
Yes, 6 points.
Yeah, I'll take – I don't think Florida's dominant enough to beat a good team, especially coming off that that demolition derby they had with the Utes last week. I'll take Kentucky on the points in that one.
I will I'm gonna follow up and you know, when the two guys who go 2-7 unite on their picks, you know, to go the opposite way, right? I think that if there's one thing that Richardson taught us during his brief career at Florida is that consistency has been an issue. He was a magician against Utah, and I don't want to take anything away. I think Kentucky is built sort of in the same fundamental sound way that the Utes are, and I do think there will be demolition derby qualities to this game. I think Florida is energized as a program and playing better than they were as they kind of sputtered away in the end under Mullen. But to see them get back up for this game is going to be a challenge for a program that hit a little bit of a lull, especially towards the end of last season. So I'm going to take the Wildcats with some points, and I expect this to be a little bit of every NFL scout in the country is going to be there, right? Because these are two quarterbacks who could end up in the top five. And I think antithetical to that, I think this game is going to be a little bit of a slobber knocker. And I could see Kentucky winning, but I would think Florida wins a close game again.
I reluctantly make this one unanimous. I do think this is one where my numbers actually disagree with the line a decent amount. They have Florida by 0.4, just a straight up toss up, basically. And so that gives me, I know Kentucky's still, you know, playing coy with some suspensions and Chris Rodriguez is not on the depth chart, but Mark Stoops is trying to go out of his way not to say that he won't play. But I like smoke. I like Kentucky's just so big in the middle. Their offensive line really wasn't all that dominant last week, but they're just so big, and it's such a unique matchup. And it feels like coming after Utah, especially, and the physicality that game required, having to do it again against a Kentucky team that probably doesn't have quite as much defensive upside, at least as Utah. Yeah, this one feels like I can see Florida winning this for sure, but give me the points there. I'm picking Kentucky too.
Let's pause on the picks here before we go into that meaty late night window. We're going to talk USC, an 8-point favorite at Stanford. Reese Davis flying from Austin to Palo Alto. If you want to hear all about that, check out the Wednesday podcast. But let's lead off with Reese, your thoughts on this game that you're going to call on Saturday night.
Well, USC has so much speed on the outside. They're probably still lacking a little bit interior defensive front. They've got some guys they'd like to see come along as pass rushers. I think this is a game that will be decided by, you know, the tempo of the game. If Stanford can kind of slow it down, run the ball effectively with EJ Smith, have McKee hit some big shots down the field, then, you know, then maybe they can stay in it. But I think USC is a lot more talented than them. Stanford hasn't been very good recently. I think, you know, they've beaten Colgate, and what they've lost, they've lost something like six of their last seven or something like that, or seven of their last eight against, you know, against FBS opponents. So, you know, I think it has a chance to be a good game, mostly because USC has a little bit of a something they're fully aware of. They've had some mental hurdles going to the farm. I asked Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley if they were prepared for how quiet, you know, it was going to be on the farm. You know, I think what now I'm looking at my notes here is they've lost their last seven Stanford has against FBS opponents. So I think it's a big hurdle for them. I think SC, you know, probably is the team you'd look at, and it's one everyone wants to see. But Stanford is looking at this as an opportunity to prove that, you know, that most of their problems were due to the restrictions imposed by the university and the state surrounding the pandemic, and that now that that's been alleviated, that they've improved. One quick story I do want to share. Holly Rose is going to have a conversation with Caleb Williams on College Game Day that I know you're going to want to see on Saturday. I don't know if this was included in it, because I spoke to Caleb the night before, and he just finished filming this PSA for mental health awareness called Seize the Awkward. We talked about what that meant exactly. He talked about seizing the awkward conversations to let people know that they can speak up about their mental health. And I followed that up by asking him, what challenges to your mental health did the move from Oklahoma to USC have? And he told this pretty remarkable story about after the bowl game that he was, you know, so much was going on. Lincoln had left. He was distraught. He was up with his family and some of his, you know, closest supporters after the bowl game. And they reached the floor of the hotel where they were staying. And he basically broke down in tears to the point where, you know, he couldn't even make it inside his hotel room to be able to have that emotional moment in private. And, you know, the recounting of that story, I think it was pretty easy in the moment to say, oh, he's following Lincoln Riley. He's going to Los Angeles on NIL money, blah, blah, blah. Pretty good reminder that even someone as talented as he is, they still have stuff. Everybody's got something going on. And it was a hurdle for him. Now he's really happy. One of the things he said is that he enjoys being nobody in Los Angeles. Now, I'm sure that's not true on campus at USC, but when you go out and about, it was a little bit different from being the Oklahoma quarterback in Norman and also being the fan favorite in Norman for when he ascended to the job from Spencer Rattler. So really, really engaging dude, obviously talented on the field. This is something that USC has sort of pointed toward because of their lack of success against Stanford generally and against Stanford there particularly. And you'll recall almost a year to the day that Stanford ran through USC and got the Trojans coach fired last year, which sort of got things started for this event. So looking forward to seeing the game and looking forward to calling the game with Kirk and Holly. Always a great pleasure to do that.
Yeah, we're not going to pick this game so Reese can maintain his objectivity on his bougie private flight that we teased him about on Wednesday. Yes, I want to echo what Reese said. He stole my point right at the end. I thought I had it, that Stanford beat USC so bad that they fired their coach, you know, within 48 hours from the game. And that game was 35-13 at the end of three quarters. And Stanford is the ultimate test for USC's weakness. And I think this will be really important. Stanford has always had maulers up front on both lines. And when Stanford is at its best, it is a point of attack program. And when you dominate the point of attack, a little bit like Michigan State under D'Antonio, like if you dominate the point of attack, you're going to win. And if you don't, it could be really, really ugly. And Stanford dominated USC at the point of attack last year and then didn't really dominate anybody else. And so Colgate is not a great litmus to see if this can be a quintessential Stanford team that we remember early from the Shaw era. I will be really curious to see what rolls out here. Cause if it goes the other way, David Shaw has done such a good job there, but it'll be an interesting crossroads for them if they do continue to struggle in league play like they did last year.
Yeah, it's really easy to think of this as USC Stanford. It's a test of USC's everything, really, and not just because of what happened last year. But this is obviously, we will learn something about their line play. We'll learn something about their defense. It's a really interesting test. This is a humongous test for Stanford too. Not necessarily that they have to win, but they have been, aside from winning a couple of close games in that 2020 season, this has been a pretty long downward trajectory for Stanford that started well before COVID. They started really slowly last week against Colgate, but they ended up hitting their cruising altitude and doing just fine. The full game stats were great. That's all good. But they kind of have a lot to prove here. And I will say, we're not making picks. If you are the type to make picks or place money on certain things, I did notice that the over is like over 60 at this point. And these two teams play at very slow tempo. So I feel pretty good about where that game's headed. We could have 38-21 kind of situation and have it still go under. So I will point that out, but no picks, I guess.
That's a good point, Bill.
I didn't mind you guys making a pick, but I do appreciate Pete trying to maintain the integrity of the broadcast Saturday night, knowing full well that I'd be rooting against you guys, whatever you pick. So I do appreciate that. But I was, nothing personal to either Stanford or USC, but I need Pete and Bill to miss some picks.
Well, we don't want you rooting against our picks on the broadcast. It's a long day for you. Right. We need you tunneled in and focused.
That's the funny thing, that when you're calling a game or doing a show, I know it's hard for fans to understand and even more difficult to get fans to believe. You're not thinking about that at all, ever. Yeah. Because you're kind of in the moment of what you're doing. And, you're not worried about rooting this or that. Now, afterwards, you're going to pay the price. Like when I talk to you and, you crush me for some bad pick I made. But, other than that, you never ever think of that. But fans hear what they want to hear, which is awesome because they care so much. And they want everyone to see the game through their prism, which is through the prism of how does it affect my team? which is great, and that's what makes it fun. But so there's no point in trying to convince them otherwise. But it is true. It is.
Couple more games here in this late window. Let's try and get through these quickly here. Baylor at BYU. BYU a 3-point favorite. Maybe the most intriguing game on the board for Saturday.
I'm well. Listeners of podcast know I am on the Cougar bandwagon. I'm rolling on the Cougar bandwagon.
I love this game so much. This really is kind of a styles make fights kind of deal. And this should be really, it's kind of interesting because, both of these teams, it's really easy to immediately start talking about their line play. Baylor's offensive line is ridiculously experienced and very good. Their defensive line's probably better. BYU's offensive line is ridiculously experienced and very good. Their defensive line is experienced. We'll find out how good they are on Saturday. But with the line play maybe canceling itself out, then suddenly it becomes kind of your Blake Shapen versus Jaron Hall kind of matchup here. And man, I don't know. Shapen was pretty much perfect against Albany. It was Albany, but they, even without Jared Verse, it appears that Albany has a pretty good pass rush because they did pressure him quite a bit. Hit him a couple more times than Baylor probably preferred, which maybe is a very good sign for BYU. But when he got the pass off, he was 17 for 20, hit a couple deep balls, was as accurate as every Baylor fan hoped he would be with a pretty remodeled receiving core. It seems like both of these teams might be have the top 15 potential that a lot of people said in the offseason. I was less sure about Baylor. I'm still going to go BYU, though. I do think they're at home. They're Jaren Hall is very, very good. This is an excellent opportunity for people to, who don't know enough about Jaren Hall to catch up. And I think with Puka Nacua and Christopher Smith there, he's got the weapons he needs too. So I think I trust BYU a little bit more, but I don't really care. I just want to watch this game.
Puka's healthy, right, Bill? Because Puka limped off the field last week, but I think he's back.
And so I didn't see that he was out.
Yeah, I think that's right. Sorry,
Reese. No, I love this game too. Told by a member of the Baylor staff this week that BYU's had this thing circled since they lost last year. But I don't. Both you guys loving on BYU so much, foreshadowing the Big 12 future. I'm going to say that the Big 12 reigning champs go in there and pull it out. So I'm gonna go Baylor. I think it'll be a great game though. I'm looking forward to seeing it too.
Now, Google does tell me that both Nacua and Gunnar Romney are game time decisions, quote unquote. And I realize, you know, we have no idea if that's true or not. That's what they're going to say regardless. But it might be a little more questionable than I thought. I'm still going BYU, though.
Last game for the day on the board, Oregon State, a 1-point favorite going to Fresno State. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
Okay. I really like this Oregon State team. Really impressed watching them against Boise State. Chance Nolan, I threw a couple of picks, but they were the dominant, better team. But those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Beav is 0-6 in Fresno all time. Jonathan Smith was the quarterback of a great Beav team, which I think had been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They were one of the preseason favorites. They went down to the Valley, big green V on the back of the headgears, and they got trucked. 44-24. I really like Oregon State, but I think it's still going to be really hot there. You got Ted Head making a reappearance in Fresno State. I'm going to, as much as I like Oregon State and am bullish on their future, I'm taking Fresno State.
I've been a Beaver bandwagon member. Our faithful listeners will know, and I'm going to carry it on. I just think. So this is obviously Jake Haner has been a Pac-12 slayer. We have seen that in the past. He went in the Rose Bowl and completely sashayed through the Bruins last year. I like this Beaver team. I think they're going to be in the conversation in the Pac-12 North. I think they have shown, and Chance Owen has shown, like the power of consistency within the program. And I think they can go down there and push Fresno around a little bit. And I think I'm going to take them to win healthily outright.
Yeah, I think one thing that running a predictive rating system has taught me is try as hard as possible not to overreact to something unexpected in week one. And so really everything I'm saying right now goes for both Oregon State and Arizona. Both of them looked much better than I expected them to look. I thought Oregon State would have a good chance of beating Boise State. Didn't expect them to be up 17-0 in about 20 minutes. And the only reason it was 17-0 and not worse, I think they lost the fumble in there that kind of, you know, that kept them from scoring again. But after that, after the 17-0, you know, reality kind of settled in and they were pretty even from that point forward. And, you know, they win 34-17. It was a lovely game. Same with Arizona. Like they jumped on San Diego State early. I did not see that coming. And they looked really good. Now you got to do it again. That's pretty much I'm daring both Oregon State and Arizona to surprise me twice. And I'm going to go with Fresno, excuse me. Fresno's just a really solid team. I thought they were the best Mountain West team coming into the season. Obviously, I mean, the coaching change always is going to give you pause, but Jeff Tedford's, you know, pretty good at his job, especially in his first year in a job. And so I think Fresno's just a slightly better team still. And, you know, if Oregon State does it again, then I'm in. Then I'm all in on the Beavers.
I'll give you a quick lock, and I know better, but I'm going to anyway. I loved what Arizona did for me in the Superdog last week, but there's still a lot of growing to do. And even with the long and storied history of the inexplicable Mike Leach face plants. I think 10.5. I think Mississippi State rolls them pretty good. I would lock that one up.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. As far as the closest thing to locks I see, Mississippi State is that one. Again, I'm daring Arizona here. If they do it again, I'm in. But I like Mississippi State minus 10.5. And I think I like, it was 67.5 was the USC Stanford point total. It was even higher than I was thinking. That's a really high point total for two slow tempos. I like that one too.
I'm going to take the Hoos as my lock, going to Champaign and getting 4.5. The Hoos just ragdolled Illinois last year, 42-14. And I just don't see a team that was that dominant and has looked fine early this season, going there and losing by a touchdown. That would be surprising me. Illinois look better. Certainly, we know we're on the upright Tommy DeVito brigade, but I just think Brennan Armstrong and a really good group of skill can go in there and win by two touchdowns.
Strong super dog candidate on Saturday morning, though that decision has not yet been made. Gentlemen, a lot of fun. Always fun to pick these games. Looking forward to the day in Austin and the evening on the farm. And hope you guys have a great college football weekend. And all of our listeners, we thank you guys for tuning in. And if you're following our advice, well, you've been warned. We'll see you next week.